good, Robert?
Yes. All right, thank you, everybody, for joining. This is a follow-up meeting in a series of meetings regarding the Colorado land and the challenges with the public, the Department of Forestry. Some new information has arisen, and Patrick and I talked about it for an hour or so today, and I was going to let Wally go, or Patrick go ahead and lay the foundation, and then we'll talk about what we want to do about that. I'll give you the floor, Patrick.
Okay. Is where we're at is the Forest Service responded back to the public on October 23rd. And I've shared that on wire with some of the people, but they're saying that they're working with the public and trying to manage this situation, which ain't true, far from the truth. They're not managing anything because the land's not even in their name or their jurisdiction. And we haven't heard one word back from them at all. So it's just them trying to keep the public busy thinking they're doing something when it's not even happening. Okay. And so is where we're at is they're trying to get the, from what we can see in their, what they communicate with the public is they're trying to get the Ute tribe to join in with them and claim under the treaty, they have an agreement treaty from 1874, which is called the Bernot Treaty, that the Ute tribe gave up their claims to the land, and they still had hunting rights and fishing rights to be able to hunt and fish. And so is what that's doing is the tribe don't know it, but the land that we're dealing with was deeded to the Republic. So they don't even have the treaty rights of April 29th, 1874. They don't have them rights to hunt and fish on the lands of the Republic. There's no agreement. There's no treaty. There's nothing that was done with the Republic. That was United States in 1874 that negotiated those rights. It wasn't the Republic. And so me and Robert think that we ought to go meet with the Ute tribe as ambassadors for the free landholder committees and meet with them and bring them aware that this land was deeded to the Republic and there's no treaty or contract that gives them rights to hunt or fish those lands. Actually show them what's going on because Forest Service ain't telling them what's going on. So the tribe hasn't had a problem. There's nothing that the tribe said or had an issue with at all. It's just that the Forest Service is trying to use the public and the tribe to say they have them rights. And that we're impeding that right of them to be able to hunt and fish, which is far from the truth. There's no impediment or impediment that's stopping
Can we make them prove?
And so,
can we make the Forest Service prove it? Do they have it?
No. Neither does the Department of Agriculture or the United States. The land was deeded to the Republic of the United States of America, and they don't have the jurisdiction. So they're trying to get the tribe to say something, and the tribe's not saying anything or responding, which is good. And so we're thinking we ought to meet with the tribal council here and educate them that this land was deeded to the Republic, not United States. And also, from what we're seeing on the paperwork between United States and the tribe of that treaty, then we don't think the tribe is aware that United States is the one that done the treaty in 1874. It wasn't the United States of America Republic that created the treaty with them. The agreement. It's not even a treaty. It's just an agreement they made to give up their claims to the land. And they were going to pay the tribe $25,000 a year and the tribal chief $1,000 a month forever. That was written in the agreement, and it's called the Bernot Agreement. You have to look it up on the internet. And so we think if we go educate the tribe, they'll be able to go back and show that the treaty has been broken with the United States. And the reason that is because the lands we're dealing with right after 1874 in April and then in 1875 and 76, they let people start homesteading on these lands. And they issued land patents from the United States, and they didn't specify in there that there was a restriction of hunting rights and fishing rights. It was agreed in the Treaty of Bernot. So the United States broke the treaty with the Ute tribe right out the gate. And so if they become aware of this, we think that the Ute tribe will join up with us also and be wanting to claim lands around us. And their treaty would be null and void because the United States broke that treaty with the tribe. And then also it's been unjust enrichment since the first land patent was issued on this treaty of Bernot, be unjust enrichment for the United States because they've been selling grazing leases and logging the mountain and selling lumber and minerals, gas and oil. Since that time, since about 1874, when they broke the
Patrick,
treaty, or not.
Patrick?
Yes.
And they also issued land patents without reserving the hunting rights.
That's what he said.
Oh, okay. I missed that.
Yes. And so the treaty was broken. If the Ute tribe becomes aware of this, they're already pretty upset about the Bernot Treaty. And it's really amazing to me that the Forest Service would even say this because they're basically throwing mud at them is what they're doing there. They do not like this treaty, and there's already a lot of flack going around that's saying, why in the heck did this Bernot Treaty even come up? You know what I'm saying? Because it was Forest Service that's stirring the muck to get the Ute tribe to come and join with them. Over hunting rights, and they have a lot more than hunting rights. The treaty was broken right after, like I say, in 1874 by United States.
We're getting some background noise. Patrick, let's take a second and try and find the background noise and mute the microphone. I think it's Charles' background.
Yeah, everybody can mute.
What about you, Jared?
Charles, if you can.
Jared, can you mute yours too?
Yeah, Charles' window lights up with the blue box.
Charles, can you mute?
I think he's trying. I think he has the I can't mute problem, where others have the I can't unmute problem.
I think he's muted now.
Nope. Maybe he could take his phone in a different room. Oh, looks muted now. Yep.
Yeah, he's muted.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay, so you guys, where this is at is we think that we've got to go meet with the Ute tribe and educate them and show them where the treaty was broken with the United States. Also show them where it's been unjust enrichment for the United States since about 1875. And the Ute tribe, we're not impeding their hunting rights. We're dealing with land that was deeded to the Republic, not to the United States. And the other thing that'll shock the Ute tribe, we think, too, is that they didn't realize they were dealing with a corporation called United States, is what we think. We think they thought they were dealing with the Republic in 1874. So what happened is they sent over this guy by the name of Bernot, the United States did, and negotiated this agreement, and the Bernot Agreement and Treaty, and that was with United States, and they were on soil of the Guadalupe-Hidalgo Treaty, of the Republic. And so that can be their decision, because they want their lands back too, next to us, from what we're hearing too. And this would open up the gate, just like what happened in Oklahoma with the Cherokee Nation and the Creek Nations there, where they took back half the state of Oklahoma. I'm talking for the Ute tribe. I'm not talking about what we're doing. We've already stated our claims on our land, but we think with having them on our side and claiming land next to us is a good plus on our side, just like we're doing with the Aniwea tribe and Wally and Mike and Robert and Ron and these guys. We're doing the same thing, and I think they'd be right alongside of us claiming land that was theirs before the United States even showed up. We just want to get everybody's opinion on it. What's that?
Second and third the motion.
Well, yeah, just a moment. And so a group of us have to go meet with the Ute tribe, and I've got to do my class with them, and however long that takes, show them the basics, show them where the treaty was broken with the United States, show them where they weren't dealing with United States. And as what's amazing is it shows, with Forest Service saying this, it shows that they're just grasping for straws. That's the only jurisdiction they claim they have is that Treaty of Bernat, that this area of this land was basically given over to the United States. But the land we're dealing with was deeded to the Republic in 1927. They don't even want to talk about the elephant in the room. That's what keeps coming up every time. They're not telling the Ute tribe, and they're not telling the public. They keep getting in there and telling the public this land was ownership, and it was under their Forest Service system since 1927. So they're not claiming ownership. They keep doing it in a roundabout way. If you read that article, and Robert understood after he read it today, that they're not trying to claim it. They're just saying it's been under the Forest Service system since 1927. And so we wanted to get everybody's opinion on what you guys think about communicating with the Ute tribe and having diplomatic communications and correspondence and communication with them and educating them and showing them that, hey, this is for you guys too. Your treaty was broken after 1874. The United States didn't follow through. They've been unjustly enriched. The United States is who you were dealing with, the United States Corporation, not the Republic of the United States of America, in here on the boundaries of the Guadalupe Hidalgo Treaty, which was ceded to the Republic. And I think once they see this paperwork and understand it and let them stew on and think about it, I think they'll be in favor of having their lands back, especially if their treaty was broken right after it was signed. And so is what they done in 1874. They went in there with this Bernat guy sent in from the United States, who was an esquire, I'm finding out, another attorney for the king, went in there and told them, we're taking your land, paid them money, and then it's just an agreement, a contract. And then after they'd done that, then they opened up the Homestead Act of 1862 and told them that the white people could now go in and start homesteading these lands. Totally broke the whole entire agreement and treaty. And totally threw out that they had the rights to hunt and fish, you know what I'm saying, forever, or until the animals ran out. And the animals are still here. They haven't ran out. The fish are still here. And so I think the communications with the Ute tribe is timely with what Forest Service is putting out there to the public.
I agree with you, Patrick. That agreement, that treaty or so-called treaty or agreement was null and void from the beginning anyway, because it was made under duress. This is a statement made in 1865 by Urey, the Ute chief, when he went to Washington to supposedly try to, well, the United States wanted to negotiate a treaty with him at that time. He made the statement, the agreement an Indian makes to a United States treaty is like the agreement a buffalo makes when his hunter when pierced with an arrow. All he can do is lay down and give up. So he knew, they knew that, that this treaty was, that it, they didn't have a choice. So they were under duress when they finally made this treaty at Bernard. They had also made another trip and saw how powerful the United States was and their army, and they realized that they didn't have a choice. That's actually documented facts. So the whole treaty was null and void in the first place.
Yeah, Mike, they had pretty much wiped them out. Yep. They had pretty much exterminated them, wiped them out, is what they were, the point they were to.
That is true.
And so the whole thing was under duress. From what we're hearing from the tribe, there's only 2,000 of them left today, right this minute. That's all that's left of that tribe is 2,000 people. I'm talking young kids, everybody, the entire tribe. What's that?
I said, I raised my hand a long time. Can I talk for a second?
Oh, yes.
Okay, so I deal with the Navajos and the Paiutes here, and the ones we get in Oregon. The most important thing we need to do is take two or three ambassadors and go speak to the chief, because the chief of that tribe is the one that gets to make the decisions. He'll probably talk to his council, but I think it's really important that we show them the benefits that they will receive, because if they're receiving money from the federal government, we discover that they will not speak up against that hand that feeds them. So we need to talk to the chief and show them the benefits that they receive from having the land back. Does that make sense?
Yes, I'm listening. The chief will be the guy to call the shots at the end of the day, the whole thing, you know what I'm saying? Call the big decision. Cindy's saying, I cannot unmute, so just my two cents. Diplomatic communication is great, but now we are dealing with the feds, the Ute tribe and the locals. Someone please tell me why we are expending so much energy without seeking a declaratory judgment, which could settle the matter and settle other issues as well. Cindy, we can't get a declaratory judgment because we're dealing with the soil and lands of the Republic and they have no jurisdiction.
Not
Sheriff Jones, the United States has no jurisdiction over it, and that's what they're all saying. And so that's why we're requesting a diplomat or a ambassador from United States, which we've told that to the sheriff and we've relayed that to the Forest Service to go to their Washington, D.C. and send out an ambassador to have communications that can speak for United States. So, and they have not been able to produce that yet. It's not even their problem. We're the ones that have to ask for that ambassador from United States, from the State Department, or from the embassy of the United States out of D.C., the free landholder committees and the tribes. But the problem is, they can't send an ambassador. I want to tell you why also, is because we're on the Guadalupe Hidalgo Treaty, you guys. That's where we're at. United States does not have the jurisdiction over the Guadalupe Hidalgo Treaty except through war powers. And after the last battle of 1863, the Civil War, which Robert can explain this, if you could, Robert, if you can chime in on that real quick on the war powers. And when we show up, they have to back down.
Yeah.
You there, Robert?
Yes. When whatever the Civil War was, when that happened, it was interfering with constitutional rights of the Crown and the Vatican to do what's in their self-interest here. So they mustered up a Union army that was being led out of Washington, D.C., to impose the peace and to protect the interests of the Crown and the Vatican. So that's your emergency war powers. That's your statutes instead of your statutes at large. That's your United States flag with a gold fringe. That's General Orders 100 from Abraham Lincoln. So they shot Lincoln, and now there was chaos, and semantic deceit was used to impose and maintain the peace. That's where carpetbaggers come from, and carpetbagger courts, like the federal district courts. They were doing commerce. They were doing emergency war powers, and they were trying to suppress the enemy, whoever that was or whatever that was, and impose the peace. And so in the process, the years were going by, and they created a new constitution in 1871, and a lot of us know this story. But in 1933, the Republic had not restored itself, and what they accepted instead was the 14th Amendment citizen, the 14th Amendment, and the 13th Amendment to the new Constitution of 1871. So now we were in some kind of grantor trust for the benefit of the United States, and they mimicked it enough that it could fool people into believing that it was the original intent and purpose of the Founding Fathers' Declaration of Independence, etc., to create a space for free and equitable people. And so today, well, I guess in 1933, they expanded war powers to the other 13 states that came online between the Civil War and the New Deal. So now there was 48 states all under these war powers, these temporary provisional war powers. And what they were saying is, we're offering you a new deal for a great society. And it was an effective selling technique. And Federal Reserve notes became the main currency, and United States Code became the main law form to manage this New Deal or this Great Society. But they still left cures in their codes, like deprivation of right under color of law. And that was sustained because it was implemented during the Civil War. It was like, if you're going to suppress the peace, if you're going to do a military occupation of the government, there has to be some peaceful, law-abiding people that you're protecting. And so by getting everybody into commerce under legal fictions, essentially they're saying anybody operating here is the enemy. And we're trading with the enemy inside the United States. That was Trading with the Enemy Act, said outside of the United States. But then Proclamation 2039 and Proclamation 2040 asked for unlimited military powers as if being invaded by a foreign army. And Congress granted that. And so what I think people need to do, according to the law, case law anyway, is that we have to occupy our courts of honor again, common law and exclusive equity, and impose the peace through law as opposed through military might. Because those resources don't belong to the military. The military is subject to those, but when we're in an emergency condition that is extra constitutional or supra constitutional, meaning it wasn't contemplated in the Constitution, you know, we can call it fraud or we can call it law of necessity, but it exists. And there are some, there's evidence in law of how to undo it. I think that's what Patrick wanted me to speak to.
And so it's what we're saying here to you guys is the last battle of the Civil War, General Lee and General Grant met together at a ladies' kitchen table over there in South Carolina. Okay. And General Lee could not give up the lands of the Republic. He couldn't give up the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo, and he couldn't give up the Treaty of Ghent. He didn't have the jurisdiction. He wasn't the president of the South of the Republic, and he couldn't give that up. And so they walked away from that battle, that very last battle, just writing five sentences on a piece of paper. They were just walking away from each other and going home, basically what it described. There was nothing he could do. He wasn't the president. Jefferson Davis was the president who would have had to sign off. And he disappeared that afternoon, that night, and headed out with the seal of the Republic and the Articles Confederation and Declaration of Independence originals and headed to Mexico.
Yep.
Where history reserved.
I've seen some historical documents where the men who were signing up to be in the army were coming from the state of Alabama or the state of Virginia with a capital T. And after the Civil War, they weren't using the capital T anymore. They were using state of Alabama. And the fact that they call it a Civil War leads me to believe that it's some kind of Roman commercial action of some sort, and that's why they don't have a treaty to resolve it, and it was some kind of ceasefire between generals.
And Donald Trump just barely brought it up 3 weeks ago. I sent it to most of everybody saying that the Civil War was never settled between the South and the North. He said it in his own word and mouth, you guys. I sent it to other people. I sent it to others. And so they're already talking about this issue right this very minute. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, because the people have never returned.
There was never no settlement. And now we're returning is what's amazing. You know what I'm saying? We're actually returning as the real people showing up that was attached to the land that was created in the Republic. A lot of these land patents. And I want to tell you another thing. We now figured out why, with this Treaty of Bernard, why the land patents in this area were issued from United States with just like on the Louisiana Purchase, and they had the land office seal on them in this area on the Guadalupe Hidalgo Treaty. It was this Bernard Treaty, and the treaty was broken, you guys. That's what that tells us. Is they were still following the same protocol of the United States. And then off of this Bernard Treaty, they were overdoing land patents that were from the Republic and not being able to put the land office seal on them or under testimony by President Coolidge or any of them, President Polk or any of them that were that era. They weren't able to do it under testimony. So people that were born or created on the Guadalupe Hidalgo Treaty, you check your land patent that you hit the ground on, if it was not sealed by the land office under testimony, you weren't born in the United States. You're born in the Republic. They couldn't finish the patent, so we had no agreements on them, and they're all over this Guadalupe Hidalgo Treaty where they couldn't finish them.
It's evidence they were standing in for our authority.
Yes. And then also, it proves that the land patents not being completed shows that the United States didn't have the jurisdiction to issue the land patents on the Guadalupe Hidalgo Treaty to anyone when they couldn't even complete the land patent. And so it's to our benefit, even with the Ute tribe, to show them this, that they could finish them on this land of the Bernard Treaty, but they couldn't finish them over in Arizona or New Mexico or Arizona or Utah or Wyoming and further north in Colorado. Is it in this Bernard Treaty was the only spot that we've seen so far that they could complete the land patent under testimony of the president. So if you understand what I'm saying there, then the United States on the Frank Stubbs patent here and the Fred Haller patent that we're claiming this land on, the United States gave up all claims when they issued them land patents forever. And then Fred Haller and Frank Stubbs went in and warranty deeded to the Republic of the in 1927 to the Republic. And so United States don't have jurisdiction through treaty law and patent law, and then having the warranty deeds issued to the Republic, and even on the deed, they went in, Fred Haller or somebody went in and marked off the state of Colorado, ran a pen through it, and they marked off Montezuma County and ran a pen through it on the handwritten deed, and they'd done it on the typewritten deed. They put X's all the way over Colorado and X's all over the Montezuma County. So Colorado don't have jurisdiction. Montezuma County don't have jurisdiction. United States don't have jurisdiction. Forest Service don't have jurisdiction. Department of Agriculture don't have jurisdiction. And neither does the Department of Interior or the Land Department. None of them. It was deeded to the Republic and made clear that's who it was going to, and even took the state and the county out. Clearly, precisely clear.
There's something that comes to mind, if I can speak for a second. This is Wally.
Yeah.
Yes.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
You're at a critical juncture here, and I'm going to kind of express it from my belief system in the scenario of the Onewea tribe and the Cherokee Nation of Indians. It's important, I think, that this mute relationship becomes a potential negotiation of a treaty between the existing landholders of the Republic and the original jurisdictional landholders of the natives. They are the original authority. And if that treaty is carried out the way I think it can go, is that the harmonization between that original jurisdiction and the respect that the landholders of the Republic bring to the table, it can create lots of opportunities because the Utes have a huge claim here. And you're about to bring a bit of knowledge to them that they can take their entire land territory back if they want to, even if it's only 2,000 people, because the right of equity does what ought to have been done, and that soil should have never been taken from those people, just as it should have never been taken from other people. And so we know that lots of time, history, and challenges are coming before us to deal with those historical repercussions, but we can at least entertain at the table right now, meeting with the Utes and harmonizing with them on what they'd like to see happen, and have that work with what we're trying to do as freeholders or potential freeholders coming forward, to start creating opportunities under that venue. And I think it's important what you're talking about now. I think that's critical, very critical, because that's where the force of law and equity and original jurisdictional law can kind of come forward and make things opportunistic for everybody. So I just wanted to bring that to the table, and I'll yield.
Hey, who is Majeli K? We keep getting an MK on here named Majeli Callie.
That's Majeli.
Identify yourself.
He's a councilman.
Okay. Member of our council for Cherokee.
Perfect. Thank you. Perfect. Sorry. Go ahead, Shauna.
So my question, Wally, is do you suggest we make a treaty with the tribes and coming in peace together on this land?
Absolutely. Treaties are considered relationships between nations, first and foremost. They are the highest law of all lands around the entire earth. And if it's done properly and the authority is there to enter into those treaties with the ones who have authority to autograph, sign, or however you want to label it, representing you know, the indigenous ones and the habitants of those soils and lands, then yes, absolutely. Because that's going to carry more weight going forward than anything. And that's kind of how we built our foundation on what we're doing, is two very specific treaties. And we're going to find out here very soon that is what has laid the foundation for us to be able to do what we do. So, you know, when treaties are breached, which has happened on every occasion with the original inhabitants of the lands or the soil, and that has negated their authority to do anything. And a lot of those treaties were entered into by corporations, which can't enter into treaties. They can only enter into contracts. And when you bring that forward, that negates a bunch of treaties.
That's why it's just an agreement. It's not even a treaty, is what Robert and us pointed out today and last night.
Exactly.
It's not even a treaty.
Because it's after 1871, exactly. And there's no treaty can be entered into after that date, specifically. Because that's a corporation.
Right. If you'll notice, they are not a corporation, and the government corporation cannot do business without being a corporation. And that's where they fail.
That's correct. Because you must have parity in law to have a contract, treaty, or an agreement between parties. There must be parity. And corporations don't have parity with men and women in the original jurisdiction.
You guys, if you read the Organic Act, okay, of 1871, when they created the corp, they could now contract. If you remember what's in there, really clear. So in 1874, they couldn't do it in 1868, which Mike brought out there. And the chief wouldn't make a deal, they could now contract under that Organic Act of 1871, creating the United States Corporation. So they come out here and they've done an agreement contract, not even a treaty, and said they'd pay them money forever, $25,000 a year is all they're paying them. That's it. That's the contract forever.
And I bet they're not even paying.
So if you understand. And so these guys don't even want to keep to this agreement. It was broken right out the gate. And this is key to be able to explain this to the Ute tribe. You know what I'm saying? To the chief. I think Martin wants to speak also. Martin.
While you're letting Martin in, I would just say if we do treaty with the Ute, we need to make sure that we are using the right title for them.
Well, that's what I was thinking. Check out the agreement and use some of the wording that was on that agreement, that original agreement they had, into your treaty.
Yeah, I see Nuche, We Nuche, Nuche. And I think they...
That's their real name.
What, the We Nuche?
Yep, that's their real name.
Yeah, and the Ute.
Look up their website. You can watch the videos. You can watch the videos. That's their real name.
Yes, and I suspect the Ute is a legal person.
Yep, that's exactly what it is. It's illegal. It ain't had nothing to do with the true tribe of who they are.
Yes. So it would be like treating with the Aboriginals. We don't want to do that. We'd want a treaty with the originals.
Miguel's trying to speak also.
Well, I live right here, right next to, I'm right on the borders of the Northern Ute tribe in Utah. Now, that the Northern Utes extends clear over into Colorado and Ouray and even further north than here. But I can tell you right now, with my experience with the Utes, you're going to have a hard time treating with them because they are full-blown U.S. citizens and they don't care about anything else. And when you try to talk to them about their original culture, they just scoff at you. They don't. We're modern Indians. We're not we don't live in teepees and tents and ride buffalo on the weekend and all that kind of stuff. They're satisfied where they're at. So caution to the wise.
Well, we should still find out what their highest leadership has to say about a conversation.
Good luck with that. I met with members of their council over there, and they just think that I'm nuts.
I can add to that my experience, because the Ute tribe is about 25 minutes from where I live on the eastern border. And my understanding from talking to several of the tribe members, especially the younger ones, is that the chief is compromised. And when the COVID lockdowns happened, the chief allowed for a kind of a military presence on the reservation, which ended up, as a result, without going into the details, some of the elderly died because people couldn't get to them because they were being restrained from getting to their family members. And they're in my experience of talking to them, they're very focused on the money that they get every month.
That's what I learned. When we went to Oregon, the same thing happened. They would not come and pick up their all of their archaeological, what do you call them? Their
relics?
Artifacts.
Yeah, the artifacts, sorry. They would not come and get them. And so one of the other chiefs came in to see why they wouldn't come pick them up. And it was because of the money. They were being paid by the federal government so much money. And the same thing happens right here on the Arizona Strip. And over here in Nevada, and it was because of the money that they received, they refused because they were making millions of dollars, and that's why they're buying them out. I told you last time that they got millions of dollars off this COVID, and because of this new monument that they're building, that they weren't going to give it up because they are all getting new houses, and they're buying them through me.
Well, and here where I'm at, this reservation here, they sit on the majority of the oil and gas that's in the ground here in this greater Uinta Basin area here. And it's probably as much or more than any other site in the entire state of Utah. So they like their arrangement. They're making money hand over fist on that oil and gas, and they don't care about casinos or government. They're content with being under federal jurisdiction. They think they've got a really good deal with the Fed.
So would we be better then to just let it be, and this land that we're claiming was deeded to the Republic? You know what I'm saying? There's not a whole lot they can even do anyway. You know what I'm saying? It was already, they already gave up claims, and then the United States gave up claims. You know what I'm saying? And it may be better if we're hearing this from other people, you know what I'm saying, from the tribal side, you know what I'm saying?
Well, I think if you expose that to the Utes, they won't hesitate to try to take it out from under you.
Yep.
So the less they know, the better off you are, in my opinion.
I hate to agree, but I do agree with them, because remember, they were all voting for Harris because that was more money.
Yep.
I have heard that the younger tribe members in their 20s and 30s are pretty disgusted. That's kind of the conversations that I've had with these younger individuals.
But at the end of the day, it'll be the council making the decisions. The younger guys are just, they're nobody to them at the end of the day. You know what I'm saying? It's sad, but it's what it is.
True, but also... also,
I get just the opposite up here. The elders are in this reservation are the ones that are disgusted. The younger generation, they're so strung out on drugs and alcohol that they don't care about tomorrow. All they care about is their next fix.
I was just at a Navajo funeral today, this afternoon, and it was the older generation that are still trying to hold on to the native tongue and the stories. The younger kids are still kind of interested, but again, the money motivates, and some of them are very motivated, especially the youths that were there today, or some that are really motivated by these millions of dollars that they're getting here.
So are we better to just stay the course then?
I say yes.
That's a hard decision because I am agreeing what I'm hearing, and then at the same time, sure, optimistically, it'd be nice if the youth would work with us.
What's the most honorable?
End of the day, you guys, this land they already gave up claims to, and they're getting their payouts, you know what I'm saying, on this land that was deeded back to the Republic, you know what I'm saying, that we're claiming. 2,100 acres.
Well, you can now see why the Forest Service is stirring them up against you because of that money.
You might talk to a chief and see, even if we just talk to one, without doing the whole council and see where they stand. But I'm finding that probably 80 to 90% of them are going for the money.
They're bought off.
Yep.
And that's why Forest Service has mentioned them in the news, in their news article like that. You know what I'm saying? Their press release.
Yep. They're using
them. They got bought off.
Step in, yeah. The government can print all kinds of money, you know.
Yeah.
It'll only change if they stop the flow of the FRNs. And then we might be able to talk to them, which could happen.
That's a good point.
And the government
well, that's going to happen soon.
Yeah. When the corporation is broke, so are they.
Right.
We might approach it at that angle.
Well, the thing is we're in the same boat they were, you guys. Our tribes and our native bloodlines we have, we're in the same boat, and we're not getting payouts. You know what I'm saying? I don't want them from the United States or bankrupt.
Right.
I'm just saying that they're just not seeing what we're seeing, I guess. You know what I'm saying? That the land's more important than anything. You know what I'm saying? Being able to be free. They'd rather have the... And we talked about this, Shauna, a while back, too. We talked about that these native tribes are just being bought off, and the American people, the bulk of the American people, are in the same boat.
Yep. Sold our souls. But if we make them aware, and that's why I'm saying, we may talk to a chief or two, you know, one at a time, and see how they feel, because most of the people will follow the chief because they will be able to explain to them the power that this really is.
What are we making aware in the amicus we're doing? What are we don't make them aware that way, but make it aware showing the corruption of the United States within the amicus you put in on this land you're doing, evidencing the criminality of the United States and how it's weaponizing the different indigenous tribes with bribery.
They're definitely doing that, Martin. That's exactly what's going on, because we're native tribes too.
That's what I'm saying. We put that in an amicus, evidencing, showing what the United States is doing and how they're weaponizing the indigenous tribes and pulling the wool over their eyes. Because think about it, the indigenous tribes aren't going to come up and go after their claim, their land, if they're getting all this kickbacks all the time, right? So that's what the United States is saying. Okay, well, you're not going to come forward, then we're going to still continue to administer to that land because you've abandoned it, and they're not making being aware that they've abandoned it because they're getting all this money coming in from the United States. If we emphasize that within the amicus, exposing it to the Supreme Court, because you guys are coming forward as self-governing landholders. You have land. You have patents that show you are. You've been issued land patents, and you're governing, and you can show. And that's one of the things that you were supposed to do as a landholder. You were supposed to be the buffer between the people being governed and the governing body. Your job as a land patent holder was to make aware to the government that you're showing that their criminality towards the people they're governing. That was the biggest role you had as a self-governing landholder.
I'm saying some people know that are in the tribe. Some of the chiefs do know that. And all we can do is talk to them. An amicus brief goes back to the corporation again, and that's the only problem that we have.
No, not an exclusive equity. It doesn't go back to the corporation. It goes back to the republic. The republic is, the people of the republic are bringing forward an amicus in exclusive equity. That means it is coming from the republic, not coming from the citizens. It's not coming from the people who are being governed. It's coming from the self-governing people who have land patents that are evidencing they are their government. That's why that sheriff won't step on that land you guys have in Colorado. Because you're governing that land.
Yeah, we know that.
Well,
but I'm just saying, if you file it, where are you going to file it?
No, we're going to lodge it. You're not going to file it. Because you file it, then that's what happens. You're stepping into their jurisdiction. You don't file anything. You lodge it into that case, evidencing that there's a third-party intervener stepping into this matter under an amicus.
Okay. And publishing it.
What you're doing is you're putting that as lodged. By lodging it, you're showing that you're not entering into that case. You're making the judges aware of a party that is not, that has superior claim over this Utah claim that's coming forward and all these other 12 states that are coming forward. You guys have a superior claim. And so do those Ute Indians have a superior claim, but they don't know that. So you could do it on their behalf without even making them aware of it.
Do it on their behalf.
We have to make them aware.
That's what the amicus would do.
I got something to say.
Okay.
I got something to say. Do you think that for 1 minute, if we go in there and explain this thing right to them, that they're not going to jump ships with us if they know that they can get 100% of the profits that they're getting right now instead of maybe a measly 2% or 3% or whatever they're getting?
You'd have to have that claim. You'd have to show them. You'd have to have everything to show them what the advantages of becoming part of what you're doing is over what they're getting from the U.S. government. If you could do
Amen.
That, you could probably sway them.
Amen. That's what I'm saying. What do we have to bring to the table to show them that those millions of dollars aren't as worth what we are offering them to go back to their native land?
It's Sean, it's 3.5 million acres with oil rights and logging rights and mineral rights and grazing rights and everything else under the sun.
Yeah, it's like
under that treaty.
It's endless, and there's so many people in the world they can sell their stuff to. They don't have to be controlled by the U.S. corporation no more.
Their own nation. They'll be their own nation, and they'll have another 3.5 million acres added back to their nation if they go cancel that contract.
I agree. We just have
the
to
U.S. has already broken. The U.S. has already broken the contract, you guys. They started issuing land patents on the land, and then took their rights away to the hunting and fishing. You know what I'm saying? It broke the contract, the agreement.
Well, in my opinion, I think a lot of people know that U.S. corporations falling to pieces right now everywhere. So there's not really very much faith in them, anyways. I think it's actually perfect timing to hit them up, to hit them, you know, to visit with them and talk to them about this circumstance. I think they're gonna be their ears are a lot more open right now than they would have been 20 or 30 years ago.
And if money is what they like, they might make more money in commerce independently than subjectively.
Oh, they'll make millions more. They can take and control all them operating wells or all them operating mines that the U.S. corporations stuck them under their control. If they can get all that stuff back into their own tribes, it's going to be huge.
Exactly.
It's called a clawback. You're going to claw back everything that those guys have ever made off of that land and get that royalty goes back to the tribe.
Right. And you sue the U.S. corporation for anything else above that. On top of it, for immunity damages for the last 200 years or whatever you want, however far back you want to go since they were in office in 1789.
But it's a freedom, remember? They need to know about the freedom. They're not under that suppression and that control that the federal government has had. They've got to value the freedom that they get back.
And being able to go back to being a self-governing body.
Yes.
Right, 100%. The majority of these tribes are smart enough now. They know enough about everything that's going on as far as their mineral rights and their oil rights and their banking systems and everything. They can totally just take right over and say, okay, you guys need to go back to wherever you're from. We're going to take control of all this. And the amount of money is like huge in every tribe. It doesn't matter.
You guys, this Oklahoma situation that happened in Oklahoma is waking these tribes up. It's happening all over the nation and the world right now. Even down when I was in Honduras and Mexico the other day, they're saying the same thing. This Oklahoma case of them giving half the state of Oklahoma back to the Creek Nation off of breaking the patent and treaty laws is exactly what the Ute and these other tribes, even in South Dakota, are looking at. We've been hearing out here out west, all over, they're seeing what happened with the Creek Nation, and they're getting on board from what we're seeing. And I'm not saying that the Utes are the ones that understand. That's where we got to have communications at least, or correspondence, and see if they're even open to the idea to do that example of what the Creek Nation done and the Cherokee Nation in Oklahoma.
Well, so you guys, that we get a hold of somebody in the Creek Nation, and maybe we can team up with somebody from that nation that already been through all the ropes, and they could really explain this stuff when we go to visit these different tribes and lay it all on the line, because they've already been through it.
I think it's worth a try. I do.
I think the
tribe here.
Go ahead.
Oh, we're not giving
here, right? I'm just saying the tribe here, the 2,000 of them that are right down here on the Four Corners area are not like the Ute tribe over in Utah. You know what I'm saying? They're grasping for straws and looking for, because I've been faced with quite a few of them now here in the area.
Yeah.
They want their land back is what I'm hearing from them. They don't want to be under United States. They want their own nation. Just talking to a lady this morning at the grocery store there in Cortez at 8 o'clock this morning told me that her and her husband, they want their lands back. They are done with this crap of United States. They want to be able to farm and ranch and be under their own nation is what she told me.
Well, maybe if we could, if we're going to go into it, maybe we could have a meeting with not just the chief, but have the chief there as well. And maybe have a meeting with 50 of them, like, so the chief can't just hide what we got to say to him. And so if you, the regular citizens, get to hear it straight from our horse's mouth, then they can all, you think that chief's going to be able to make his own decision if half, 50 people in the community hear about it?
I think it's worth a diplomatic invitation. And if they accept, then I think that Ron Gibson and Wally should be present.
100%, I agree.
Equity does well with notice and records, and we would be giving notice of some circumstances, and we would have a record of an invitation of that notice and our invitation to speak about it.
And Robert, in that invitation, we could let them know who we are, actually are, instead of the news or the Forest Service telling them, you know what I'm saying?
Yes. That's why I'd like to have that article, see how well it comes out, and we could include that with the invitation, and I think that article would come out swiftly. Brian, you could comment on that. How ready?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And so that would be a good piece of media to show that that is our public position. That's the position we intend to prove and stand behind and maintain. And I have no reason to believe yet that Cameron wouldn't do a good job of making that accurate, quoting us.
What about making that article into a notice? Giving notice during the article.
I'd rather do it through registered mail. An invitation.
Or both?
Or both, yeah, I'd say both.
I didn't like the registered mail idea. That way
I don't know you want to know what we're up to either, you guys, everything, you know what I'm saying?
I'm not saying get specific, I'm just saying you put a notice, just put a notice that you're willing to do negotiate, you're willing to interact and that type of thing. Making that article, same thing with the people in the township, the people you're dealing with the towns.
Yes.
Making that into a notice to the town people. Hey, we're here to negotiate this. We're here to talk about this. We're here to try to subtly, calm the air.
That's exactly what we've been doing and posting at the post offices and putting in the news, and we're doing that again. But we want to invite the Ute tribes to come and talk to us, because that's who Forest Service is putting in their public release, as they're talking about the Ute tribe. They're saying the same thing, trying to buy off the Ute tribe.
Buying them out.
If you make that invitation to the Utes public in the form of a public notice, as well as the registered mail, if you were to do it in the public, then the Forest Service gets wind of that. They might try to intervene with them and try to get them, try to get out ahead of it and try to steer them away from you.
I agree with that.
I think what you're going to look out for is that they're going to try to pit you guys against each other is what they'll do. If they can create a culture war between you, then they can get you distracted and they can take over.
Yeah, true. That's why we don't need them all to know. That's why you need to do an invitation to them and then make your deal before we get the first. We have to get the first step in before they do that.
That's correct.
The only reason I said that, put it in that article, is not to be specific about it. Just say an open invitation to that you're willing to work with anyone out here to try to make this, an amicable situation.
Were you on the call last night, Martin? Did you hear?
No.
Okay.
No.
Yeah, we have a couple of drafts that do everything you're talking about.
Okay.
I think that we should go ahead with the article and get it published, and then we could take that article and use it as I'm trying to think of the right word, evidence of who we are and what our intents are, and that we do want to talk to people.
Supporting document.
Yeah.
Well, the only reason I said you just put the word notice anywhere in it. I don't care if it's down in a fine print. That way it's a form of a notice. It doesn't have to be right at the very beginning. This is a notice. No, just by putting it anywhere, like the IRS does. The IRS sends you stuff in the mail. And you don't even realize it's a notice, but if you read down in the fine print, you'll see the word notice. And then they say, well, we gave them notice.
Right. Equity does well with notice.
Oh, yeah, I totally agree. Okay, so I guess everybody's good with that article then?
I am.
And we're going to add this stuff to it that between the Ute tribe, because that's who they're using, the Forest Service is mentioning them. You know what I'm saying? We want to have open communication.
I think we might be better off to privately reach out to the Utes first.
I agree with that.
Go public later.
I agree with that.
Yep, me too.
But still do an invitation then, too.
Yeah.
Don't have to mention them, then do an invitation.
Yes, that I agree.
Should we make a motion and vote on that, or we want to wait for another meeting on Monday?
Do we have a quorum here?
I don't know.
We've got to get this done. We can't wait till Monday.
Yeah, we do. We got to get this done.
We've
already waited a week.
Somebody start the motion.
We have 8 out of the 10, so we've got Patrick and Shauna and Brian. That's 3.
Well, Shauna, hold on. Me, Shauna, hold on. Me and you and Robert have already been voted as ambassadors to speak with the public.
Yeah, this is international.
So we can vote that us in the group that's here. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
And I communicate with Sam.
And I want to be here. I personally reached out and called him last night.
Yeah, and so I'm saying we've got to decide here tonight because we've been waiting a week to get this done or 10 days.
I agree.
You can't get behind the narrative for you guys. We have to stay out of the narrative.
Exactly.
What is going on the record today?
Are you saying, Patrick, you guys have proxy rights as ambassadors?
Yes.
You can vote on
all of them then, because if you have proxy rights, then you have the ability to vote for them.
Yeah, regarding international.
So that's why we're saying.
Regarding international communications and range.
Yes, and so I think with Leonard being here and Brian and John Gibson and everybody, they can decide because they're on the line if that's what they want too. They're here. I'm in favor of it.
I'm in favor.
This is Leonard. I'm in favor.
Well, let's say who opposes. There you go.
Crickets.
Done.
Okay, so we'll get this news release put out probably tomorrow or the next day, next few days, with the Cortez Journal here with Cameron, and then we'll also do it as an invitation and type a notice like we talked.
Sure. Can I ask for the floor for Betty to read her revised version of the two drafts last night?
Please.
Are you going to post it?
Let's see if Betty, are you still here? She might not be here.
Well, maybe you could just post it
I'm here.
There she is. Can you read your revised version?
Yes, and there are some additional things that need to be revised. So it says, Dear Mancos neighbors and community, we are reaching out to you today in a spirit of peace with our sacred honor at the forefront of everything we do. As the Free Landholder Committee, FLHC, we understand there are passionate concerns about the future of our public lands and usage. We want to address these concerns with the same transparency and commitment to peace, honor, and exclusive equity that has guided all our nation, all our actions, proclamations, and notices. Although there is some distance remaining between the FLHC and our local neighbors in settling differences and further aligning our mutual interests, the FLHC recognizes that trust is earned through both words and actions. Our written commitments and our peaceful and honorable actions have shown our dedication to the following: maintaining peace within all our interactions, even when others are armed and angered, upholding our sacred honor in every promise we make to locals, the sheriff, and the Department of Forestry. In parentheses, I said, is there any other federal agency that needs to be listed here? Ensuring everyone has exclusively equitable and peaceful access to community benefits. At the heart of this delay in resolution appears to be a misunderstanding by others about who we are. We feel it is important to share the truth about the FLHC and the members. And I didn't know, because it's not just the committee, it's the other people that are not on the committee. So FLHC and the members / communities / others who align with exclusive equity and honor, as some of our forefathers did. We are not connected to Warren Jeff or the fundamental Latter-day Saints, FLDS, from years ago that had land in Mancos. This is definitely not who we are. Well, some of our members may have family history with the previous religious group. They have firmly chosen different paths at great cost to their family, friends, and business relations, and do not participate or do not practice those traditions or religious ideology. In fact, some of our community members are responsible for providing key information to federal law enforcement, which led to the imprisonment of Warren Jeffs and getting his group out of the Mancos area. We are not sovereign citizens. We do not support hate speech or incite aggression. Who is the FLHC? The FLHC is a diverse family of community members, including Native American community members who bring their deep understanding of community and sacred traditions, Black Americans who contribute their own enriching perspectives and experiences, many American community members who share our values in peace, sacred honor, and exclusive equity, lineage of being the original habitants of Mancos, non-United States of American residents due to the act of, I don't know what the act is when the polygamists weren't allowed to be part of the United States, but I didn't. Pardon me? I didn't know if that needed to be included because that might help people understand a little bit. What we value and support, we support mutual settle by law. The FLHC honors that we all live under the same law and would like to honor the law as we move together for better understanding and peaceable and honorable settlements. We support inquiry and respect for our sheriff as he is upholding the law and our rights as free landholders. The path of peace we walk is one that welcomes all voices and perspectives / claims. Our sacred honor compels us to be clear. Our commitment, which we have demonstrated consistently through both our words and actions recently and over the years, is to preserve equitable access to community benefits for all members of the public. We welcome the opportunity to meet with you, to share our vision of community where peace and exclusive equity flourish, and to discuss how we can work together to enhance the community benefits which all of us value. Our commitment to sacred honor means every word we speak is clear and backed by equitable action, and every promise we make is one we intend to keep. Please accept our invitation to join us in dialogue. We want to meet you, address your concerns and fears, and share our discoveries, I didn't know what word to put in there, which will benefit your future, your family, your private business, and those who come after us. We are committed to coming together in peace and guided by honor we will build an even stronger and durable community together. And I broke it down so it was in smaller paragraphs and little bite size, because that's how people take in information.
Thank you for that.
Yes, thank you, Betty.
Yep. So it may still need some just some detailing, but I think the concept is there as who are we, and so all those statements can be backed by our proclamation, our notice, our interaction up on the fence line, and other comments that have been quoted in the newspaper articles. But this will be a good long-form article that really indirectly calls out a lot of BS we've been subject to.
Yes.
Rather than directly.
There are a couple things we need to do before we finish that, because I don't think we should bring up the word sovereign citizen. It's a big red flag, just the way polygamous is, those types of things, only because if you look up the definition, that's what we all are. So we can't, we don't really want, it's just a bad thing, but it's a bad word. So I don't even want to entertain that word.
I guarantee you, if you open that door, they will walk through it.
That's what I'm saying. So we don't want to introduce the word at all.
They're already using the word on Facebook.
That's okay. We don't need to use the word, because that's a red flag word.
That's it.
if you could, how do you feel about we are nonviolent, non-belligerent, not anti-government?
We're not enemy. Not
we
enemy
are free landholders.
Are we going to stay with free landholders and prohibited forever from the United States? Free landholders is key, you guys, and with yes. Inhabitants, free landholders prohibited forever from joining the United States.
And we accept no titles. We accept no titles. Just put those words in there, because
yes.
They can label you whatever they want. We accept no titles.
I like that, Wally.
Be careful about defining yourself in the corner.
Well, free landholders, it's the title, guys.
The more words you use, the more you have to define them, the more you have to stand by them. You
yes.
Get yourself in real quick.
Free landholders is the title, but that's exactly what we are. So we
so
have a right.
Does what we
well, yeah, you're men and women. You're men and women.
Yeah.
A free landholder is a position that you have. It's not a title.
There you go.
The land is attached to you. You're attached to the land. And
it's
so
a position.
You're
yeah, you're
land.
Yes, it's a position. It's not a title.
Men and women of the land.
No, we got to stay with who we are, Shauna. You're a habitant, free landholder, prohibited forever from joining the United States.
Okay.
That's who we've been. That's who we've always been.
Your land patents will automatically define you as free men on the land. And that includes...
They speak for their... No.
So I would caution you about even mentioning that. I mean, let the patent speak for itself.
Okay. I like it. That's kind of the way I feel about the paragraph that you go into fine detail about us not being part of the FLDS. I don't think it
needs
to go into all
that.
I don't need to. I don't think it needs to go into all that detail. Just say we're not a part of the FLDS and leave it at that.
Yep.
Because then you start, like, I'm agreeing with everything you guys are saying, because you start going into more detail, and it gives everybody another idea of some way they can throw another jab at us. It's like, we're not part of the FLDS, and that's just enough of that subject.
Yes, I think we just drop it there.
Yeah, good point.
Martin? Okay.
They're kind of like a liar. You just... You start talking, and these lawyers, just every word you say, they start
screwing
yourself up in your mind.
Oh, they're good at it. These esquires of the king, they're doing his bidding.
I would add to that, this is Chad, on the FLDS comment, that not part of any other religious cult organization, since we're a diverse group. Some way to say that.
I like that also.
I wouldn't even mention that. Just say we're not part of the LDS like you accuse us of.
This is no religious group.
No, it's worth mentioning.
Well, I shouldn't say religious. You should say no denominational religious denominational group.
Religious is the right way to say it. Non-religious is the way to say it.
Yeah, but God, I mean, we're all God-fearing, so it's not that. We're all Christian. That's just that we are not affiliated with the religious group.
Religious organizations.
Yeah, religious organizations.
That way you don't have to even mention LDS and all that stuff.
Yeah, just leave that out.
I agree.
Keep it as simple as possible.
We're just children of God.
Amen.
On the way.
Amen again.
Playing in the sandbox.
I like the term nature's law, nature's God. It's kind of universal.
Yeah, it's on that nature's God is the way to put it in nature, you know what I'm saying? And God, nature's God is the way it's written in the Declaration of Independence.
Yeah, I'd say best, because a lot of people identify with that on the other side right at the moment.
Yes.
Well, you're getting, the more tribes we get involved too, they don't necessarily believe in the same God we do either. So some of them do, some of them don't.
But they do believe in nature's God.
I like the term nature's law, nature's God.
So do I.
I like it too.
You guys, I have another funeral to go to. Are we, tell us what we're going to do today. I mean, where do we go from here?
I say we have some open communication with the Ute tribe.
Yeah.
Privately, I don't know how to approach it yet. I'm thinking how to approach it, but with Robert and Ron Gibson and Wally Brown Bear and myself, and probably you, Sean, because you've got native blood.
Yeah.
I'll go with you, Patrick. I'll go to the meeting.
And so we got to show up with natives on the big side of it. We'll have a lot more clout with them, you know what I'm saying, as we're natives too, you know what I'm saying?
Yep. So are we going to write up an invitation then? We're going to put up the article first and then a special invitation to tribal chiefs and then have a meeting.
I think that sounds good.
Is that what I'm hearing?
Well, yes, I think that's what we ought to do.
Yep.
We'll can you put in wire the exact letter that we're going over? Well, I want to see the article that we massage or whatever we're going to do, and then and the invitation. We need to write that up and get it sent.
Okay, I agree with that, and we can post it on wire. And then the other thing is we need to talk about Robert and Shauna and myself having the credentials and paperwork that we're ambassadors for the Free Landholder Committees, so we can present that to United States or to Forest Service or to the sheriff or to the tribe, the Ute tribe, so we're not just telling verbally that's who we are.
Robert?
Yes.
You were making up some identifications.
Yes.
You were getting some. Can we get those three done? Say ambassador on it.
Wally currently has the machine for the nation. Wally, are you on this call?
Yes, I'm here. We can get that done. I just need the graphics and however you want to lay it out.
Yeah, the photos, the seal, And
yeah, just put all the graphics, you know how the format works. So just put all the graphics in there and just get those to me in a bulk. And then if you've got some sort of rendering made up or however you want it to lay out, I can do a preliminary, send some screenshots out to everyone, and we can come up with whatever needs to be done to make it the final version. We can do that pretty quick turnaround. So I just need the details first so we can get started.
Got it.
Do you need anything more from me? Just call me.
Okay.
I think
well,
you have it all.
No, I think I already have photos.
Yeah.
I don't remember if I got a photo of Patrick or not.
You did, Robert.
Okay, good. Yep. Then I think everything we need to give to Wally.
Okay.
So we have to get that done if everybody's in agreement, Leonard and Brian and Jared Stubbs. We got to talk about it if you guys are in agreement. You already voted, but we're just creating the credentials so we can be able to show our credentials of who we are, not just verbally say it.
Right.
Correct.
So if they're in agreement, Brian and Leonard, they already agreed up here to vote, but we just want to be able to get the credentials if everybody's in agreement done.
I'm in agreement.
Okay.
Yes, I'm in agreement.
I am also. Okay, that way we can interface with the other side. And actually, as what we've got to do is, if nobody's going to speak for United States, then I've got to get through to the United States Ambassador's Office in D.C. And I have to be able to show them who I am and request a diplomat or an ambassador to show up to speak for United States.
Yes.
Yeah, I think
it won't happen till
after. Yeah, I think it's important for all of us.
Because this is what happened, you guys. This is what happened is we were trespassed on, okay, by United States citizens and subjects. They come in with guns on their side, tore our fences down, ripped out our claim pegs, ripped out our fences, cost us 300 feet off of the land of the Republic, robbed it, and robbed the claim pegs, everything, you know what I'm saying? And they were citizens and subjects of the United States.
Yep.
And so we have been attacked, you know what I'm saying? And we've been harmed financially. We've been harmed we've been vandalized. We've been theft, damage of property by their subjects and their citizens. Yes. And so we have to relay that over to the embassy. Hey, there's got to be some correspondence and communications here. And so we've got to have that from United States. And they're our neighbors here also. United States has land right next to us.
And give the sheriff, we already noticed the sheriff, remember that day that there was a crime being committed?
Yes.
So it is now documented.
Yes. It is. It's all documented. I'm going to go get copies of all of it from Steve. And then when I met with the sheriff last week, he said, that's perfect if you guys can communicate with the embassy, because the sheriff can't speak for us or for you or for the Republic.
Right.
And neither can Forest Service or the Department of the Interior or the Department of Agriculture. They cannot speak for us. They're the dead corpses. We're the alive living men and women that have showed up. And we have to have somebody from the United States that can speak on behalf of the United States, and these guys can't.
Yeah.
They even told me that. The Forest Service said they just couldn't answer. They just couldn't answer of the name that the land was in. We presented it to them on that meeting. They just said they just can't answer it.
Yeah. They can't answer.
So, and that's why I requested the Forest Service, and I requested to the sheriff, that we are requesting an ambassador or a diplomat from the United States to show up and have correspondence communication. I made it clear to them. But they can't even relay that because they're the dead corpses. We've got to be the ones that do it through registered mail and communications.
You're right, Andy.
The righteous scriptures
So I think our path is clear.
Yes. And then the other subject we need to talk about is we're working on this amicus brief with the United States Supreme Court. I'm working with Martin and Robert Williams. I got to talk to Ron Gibson about it. And Kevin Martin is going to plan on coming to Phoenix, and I got to see if Robert can make it down to Phoenix next weekend to where we can sit down and get this amicus brief drafted up with Martin and all of us with our brains together and get this and interject it into the Supreme Court as an amicus brief with this case in Utah.
Brian, can you mute, brother? You're getting some feedback on Patrick's voice there.
Of course.
Thank you, brother. Thank you.
So, should I repeat that again? So, Martin, myself, Robert William, Kevin Martin, and Ron Gibson, possibly, which I got to talk to still. He looks like we lost him on the line, but are planning on meeting in Phoenix, is what I'm putting together at the moment, to create this amicus brief for the United States Supreme Court to be interjected as an amicus brief with this situation going on in Utah and these other 12 states, plundering the spoils of the Republic and these lands that we were here before and claiming they're the habitant, and were here before when they weren't.
What day is that going to take place?
We're probably going to do it on Friday, Saturday, somewhere next weekend, or Sunday, one of them couple of days there. I just got to communicate with Martin and Robert William and Kevin Martin, and we've got to get this drafted up and then put into the case there in the Supreme Court as soon as possible.
I will be in Phoenix on Thursday.
Okay.
Wednesday night. If I need to be there, if not.
So if everybody's in agreement with that, we've got to get that. Brian, you got to silence your phone or something. Keeps on interfering. So if everybody's in agreement with that, then we already agreed to do the amicus brief with the United States Supreme Court. Then we'll have that drafted and put together and get a plan on when to interject that into the case.
I agree.
So do I.
So, Wally, if you want to, I don't know what's wrong with your phone, Brian. It keeps messing up the talking. So, Wally, if you want to be on that meeting, too, in Phoenix for this amicus brief, I think you're going to want to mention the native title also. And with the Freelandholder Committees that we're working with, and then myself also being a part of the Native Tribe, being back there from Carolina and Virginia.
Okay, I'll coordinate with Rob on and see what the opportunities are there.
Yes, I think it'd be smart to have the Native Tribe side too, and the habitants, and not just the Freelandholder Committee side, filed with the Supreme Court. There's a way to do that.
Okay.
Brian, are you able to mute?
I don't know if that's me. I'm not making no noise.
Oh, your blue box.
It's yours.
Keeps
I keep
showing.
Doing it.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm just going to restart my phone then, because I don't know what's going on.
Do you have a mute button? All right.
You there, Robert?
I am, yep.
So what do you think on your schedule for next week sometime to come to Phoenix, you think?
If I could get the dates, then I can see where the scheduling problems might be and work on getting the clearance, but I'd like to work on it and get there.
yeah, I think it's going to be well worth having this all there and having our brains going and having Ron on the information too and what's going on. Like Wally's got a lot of stuff too that he could add and all of us and
yeah,
that'd be really smart for this brief.
Yeah, an amicus brief requires, you know, all of us to, that are, you know, that not that anybody's not important, but those that can speak to it and craft it should do everything they can to be there. Right? We need to take the most of the best that we have as a group.
I think Ron Gibson still here is the First Nation, isn't he?
Yeah, that's his computer, but I know it doesn't have any audio. So it's probably okay. Just left on from the beginning.
Okay, so we'll just communicate with him then. Yeah. But I think we're going to want to have him on a lot of stuff too to discuss with us.
Yes. Yep.
Anybody else have any questions tonight? What they're thinking or anything on? Another thing we need to talk about was getting land patents issued now. We got the green cards back. I sent them to everybody from the Lieutenant Governor, Attorney General, and the Governor of Utah that they accepted.
Yeah.
Did you send them to the email?
No.
I emailed them to you, Sean, also.
That's what I thought.
There's junior committee.
I emailed them to everybody.
There's junior committee issues that we still need to discuss. And so we have to figure out what those are, if any.
The PMA.
I think we can do that on Monday. Yes, I think we can do that on Monday night's meeting and get that agreed and done because it'll be real close to the same mother patent. I mean, the same first one we already created. It's going to be real close to the same except for just a few changes.
Sounds good. And then once that issue is resolved and is ready to accept grantees, then, you know, they can join that committee, junior committee, or that junior PMA and receive their patents and participate.
Perfect.
Everybody good with that? Because we got to get this patents issued right soon. So if everybody's good for Monday, Leonard and Jared and Brian and everybody to get this figured out, this junior PMA, then we got to get it down and get moving forward on issuing patents.
Perfect.
I'm good with it.
Yep.
Me too.
I'm ready.
Yeah, we want people to have the rights and standing, and if they would like to help in some of these issues, then they will have the right standing to participate. And if they just want the patent, I guess that's okay too. But we need more free land holders.
Yep.
Okay, and the other question is, there's another school trust lands auction coming up on the 14th to the 19th. There's a 72-acre piece out in Burrell, Utah I'm looking close at. We could do the same thing we done there in, yes, out by Enterprise Burl. We do the same thing we done up there and create another 72 times 4 quarter acre lots again, have another whole tranche ready to go.
I'll help with it.
So, and we can talk about that Monday on the Monday night meeting, but it's coming up pretty quick, and I got to start putting money together to go do that and decide that's what I'm doing, go do it. Get it done. So you're talking 72 more acres times 4, so whatever that is, it'll create that much many more lots again. We have Dennis do the engineering again and get it done.
Great. Count us in.
The Utah Trust Lands Administration will offer the East Burrell parcel for sale at a future auction.
Somebody's playing it.
Yeah, I just turned it on. For real.
Yes.
Yeah, I saw it.
So you can look at that thing. And I'm going to go round up money. So I'm going to go figure out, I think, and get another one figured out. So I just know that this is amazing, being able to get land patents issued to us. It's a phenomenal
situation. Call me and I'll help.
I'll participate if it's optional.
So if anybody, if anybody wants to look up School Trust Lands, the Utah School Trust Lands Administration, you can look it up and see what's going on on the internet. You can look at the blue where it says sales and leases. You can look at what's selling and what's going on around Utah. There's about 10 of them. Some of them are smaller. Some of them are a little bit bigger. It's different sizes.
It's a 72-acre triangle.
Yes. It's right by the fire station there at Burl Junction.
Excellent.
Do any other states do what Utah does on their trust lands and auction them off?
No. Nope. We've already looked and tried and checked all over the place. Utah's a unique situation that they're actually selling it, which is really interesting. All the other ones aren't selling, they're just leasing. There's only two other people that can issue land patents, you guys, and anyone that is, that's the state of Utah and United States and the King of England and us. That's the honest truth. That's the only people we've been able to find out that can actually issue a land patent. And us being able to issue underneath these other ones. So that's been a lot of research. That's the United States that can issue them, and state of Utah and the King of England and us as the junior patents from our big patents.
I love you guys, but I gotta go.
All right, Shauna, we'll see you next time.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you, Shauna.
If you get down to the nitty gritty, we're the only ones that can issue them in the real republic, right? In the Hidalgo Treaty area?
We're not there yet, but we can definitely do junior patents, which we're doing. So, anybody else have any other questions?
I'm good.
And the neat thing is the sheriff's respecting it. It gives you standing having these patents. You guys are seeing it. You know what I'm saying? The public, you know what I'm saying? When you have land patents in your name and you're attached to the land, it's a big thing to have that.
Hey, Patrick, when you set up that meeting down in Phoenix, let me know if I'm in the area. I'd like to go.
Yeah, I will. I'll go talk to Martin and Robert, everybody, let you know what days.
Okay. Meeting adjourned.
Any opposed? All right.
I think we're good. Yeah. Robert, I'll be calling you tomorrow, Robert, and line up and Brian and line this article up, and then communicate with Martin on the meetings.
That sounds good. Thank you, Patrick.
So.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, everybody. Sure. Appreciate everybody's time, and thank you so much. Really appreciate it, and have a great night, and thank you.
Thank you.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.